Chapter 3. Obi-Wan wakes up feeling better than he has in days. Warm, drowsy in a way that means he's on the good drugs, and in a bed. The bed is in a slightly upright angle, and both his head and arms are resting on soft pillows. After Force knows how long in the cold, it might as well be heaven. He opens his eyes to the dimmed lights of what must be a medbay, immediately flooded with relief. Welcome back. Steady appears in his line of sight, checking the screen next to Obi-Wan's bed. When he seems satisfied with what he sees, he turns to Obi-Wan with a raised eyebrow. When I said rest, I did not mean to be a lunatic and run out onto a battlefield. They were going to die, Obi-Wan protests weakly, while he tries to look around the medbay without moving too much, trying to find both the commander and the trooper he'd tried to save with a burst of panic in his chest. To his relief, Thumper is in the bed across from him, still asleep. And the commander, so you decided to make corpses of the three of us. The commander is in the bed next to his, and is giving him a thoroughly unimpressed look. Obi-Wan gives him a pleasant smile. You're welcome. Steady sighs and raises his eyes to the ceiling. You two deserve to be next to each other, he says. The medic draws the privacy curtain and spends the next few minutes checking over Obi-Wan before giving Obi-Wan the full details of his injuries and expected recovery trajectory. His core body temperature is back to normal, and there shouldn't be any long-term effects from the hypothermia. He's on painkillers for his fractured ribs, which will take roughly 6 weeks to heal. Here, Steady gives him a warning look. No strenuous activity while you heal, although you should stay active. We'll assign you to a physical therapist to help with rehabilitation and to find the right balance. He will also show you some deep breathing and coughing exercises to help prevent a collapsed lung or lung infection. Obi-Wan inclines his head in acknowledgement. Thank you for all the help and care. Steady raises an amused eyebrow. I'm not done, he says, and continues. He explains the wound treatment for the laceration on Obi-Wan's leg and the management of concussion recovery. It all amounts to taking rest, but not too much, and slowly reducing the pain medication while increasing physical movement and returning to everyday activities. He's informed he'll stay in the medbay for at least another 48 hours, just in case, after which he'll be assigned to a bunk and daily appointments with the medics until his return to Meladon. Later, when he's close to falling asleep, he hears a soft, "Thank you," from the bed next to him. He smiles to himself and murmurs back, You're welcome, Commander. You will not interrogate a patient in my medbay. Steady is on the other side of the medbay, near the entrance, and his voice is loud and thunderous, just like the expression on his face as he looks at General Jin. Jin, who looks as serene and unimpressed as Obi-Wan remembers from his time as a Padawan. You were there, Captain Steady. It is obvious this was a trap, medbay or not. The Triumvir must be questioned. In the bed next to Obi-Wan, Cody sighs. It's so soft, Obi-Wan is certain he is the only one that hears, and when he glances at the commander, his expression is schooled into nothing but professionalism. I'm inclined to agree with Steady, sir, he says, voice unwavering even when he is faced with Jen's judgmental eyes. Both the Triumvir and myself are recovering in what is considered a safe and public environment. I know the Triumvir saved your life, Jin replies tartly, brushing Cody's comment aside without consideration, but he is also the one that endangered it. Inside Obi-Wan, some abandoned part of him that is still a hopeful 13-year-old initiate wanting to be chosen aches at being distrusted by the Jedi Master. He shoves it down and away, reminding himself that he has let go of his past, that he has accepted a long time ago that Jin's opinion of him will always be tainted by the man's own trauma. Besides, despite the initial sting of such obvious distrust, Obi-Wan can't fault the man for it. For in the end, even if Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn once knew each other as intimate as master and apprentice, the reality is that now they might as well be strangers. Obi-Wan clears his throat, the sound catching everyone's attention, but he is only looking at Jin from where he's seated in his bed. It wasn't a trap. That is all the encouragement Jin needs to swoop into the room and towards Obi-Wan. Steady follows at his heels. General, I said you can't. I believe it is fine if the Triumvir is willing to talk, with a wave of his hand. Steady isn't deterred. He might be willing, but I am his assigned healthcare provider. He needs rest, and his thinking might still be impaired. Jin stops and turns to give Steady a flat look. Well, I appreciate your dedication, Steady. This isn't the time. Kenobi isn't a guest. He is currently part of an investigation, and standard operating procedures dictate we must speak with him as a priority. Before a doubtful-looking Steady can reply, Obi-Wan says, I feel fine. Fine, meaning the cotton in his brain is gone, and he's only on a mild dose of pain medication to keep the headache at bay. He gives Steady a small, reassuring smile. Besides, it will be a short conversation. There is hardly much to say, Obi-Wan says with a small shrug, and he has to bite back a wince as his ribs burn at the movement. Fine apparently also means that he needs to be a bit more mindful of his movements as he heals. He looks up at Jin, who is now towering over him at the side of his bed. He raises an eyebrow. Or do you think I staged my own near-death experience to do what, exactly? Attack the people that saved my life? Jin considers him for a moment before crossing his arms in front of his chest. I think it is best you perhaps tell me more about Melodon's attendance at the IRCA summit on Naboo. Obi-Wan resists the urge to roll his eyes. He had not expected for the Republic, or for members of the Gar at least, to hold such flawed ideas on the IRCA. The IRCA is an independent charitable organization, much like the Service Corps. We are not separatists, he states firmly. The fact that I was shot down by separatist vulture droids should be proof enough of that. That statement earns him a frown from the general. The separatists tried to kill you. Yes, although I don't have the faintest as to why, Obi-Wan says, letting out a soft and frustrated sigh. When he speaks next, it is with a pointed look at Jin. The only ones Melodon has aggrieved are the Republic, but I am assuming they will not result to assassinating a planetary leader just because they refuse to join them. Jin raises an eyebrow. You would be right in your assumption, but the fact the Separatists shot you down does not mean you can't be working with them. We'd sooner work with the Republic, Obi-Wan says with a scowl. It's true they don't hold love for the Republic, but they are still better than the CIS. Have you taken the flight recorder from my ship? You will see it was indeed Separatist droids that shot me down. Unprompted. Jin leans his head to the side. Suspicious in and of itself. Does the Force tell you there is any deception to what I have said? Obi-Wan argues, raising an eyebrow at the other man. Surely it will tell you that all I speak is the truth. Jin looks peeved at the words, if only for a fleeting moment. It's enough to confirm for Obi-Wan that he's right, and the other knows that he's been told the truth. It seems, however, Jin isn't quite so willing to accept it himself, and he turns a questioning gaze to Cody. What do you think, Commander? The Commander has been quietly following the conversation, just like everyone else. He looks slightly aggrieved at being dragged into it, and his eyes flick from Jin to Obi-Wan. He looks thoughtful for a moment, yet his shields are so strong Obi-Wan can't get an inkling of what's going on in the other man's mind at either the conversation or Obi-Wan's knowledge of the Force, and Jin's lack of surprise at that fact. Then, Cody turns to Jin. If the Force says that the Triumvir is telling the truth, I think it is worth listening. He gives Jin a placid smile. The Force provides, right, General? Jin looks absolutely constipated at having what are most likely his own words thrown into his face, and Obi-Wan tries very hard not to laugh. It is interesting, though, to see Jin deflate after another second or so, as if Cody's rather snarky words are enough to make him backtrack and reconsider the situation. Either way, Obi-Wan finds himself grateful for Cody's words when Jin nods, mumbles a, "Thank you, Commander," and with one last look at Obi-Wan, deems the conversation finished. Certainly, the Marshal Commander is a very efficient man if he can shut Qui-Gon Jinn up so effectively. Obi-Wan. Neald's eyes are wide in shock, his mouth slack, but it only lasts a second before relief takes over. A shuddering breath, a relaxation at the side of his eyes, and a wide smile that seems to go from ear to ear. Sarasi! Sarasi! Come here! Hurry! He hollers. It's Obi-Wan. He's... He breaks off on a shuddering breath, and a hint of desperation tinges his voice when he breathes, "You're alive." Obi-Wan swallows, a lump in his throat. He gives Neeld a wan smile that doesn't quite reach his eyes. "You're not getting rid of me that easily," he jokes. It falls completely flat. "Kark, Obi-Wan," Neeld curses. "We thought you—" "Yeah," Obi-Wan interrupts before Neeld can finish, before he can say, "died," and his voice is soft and frail and hoarse. "Me too." "Obi!" Sarasi's relieved shout booms through the small speakers of the handheld holoprojector, and a second later, her blue image appears next to Neeld. There's shock etched into her face, and tears clinging to her eyes. "Hello, darling." "You're alive, I—" she falters, takes a shuddering breath, and when Neeld lays a comforting hand on her shoulder, whispers, "We were so scared." Obi-Wan wishes he was with them, that he could hug them and bury his face in Sarasi's long red hair and feel the grounding weight of Neeld's hands against his back, that he could assure all of them that he is still alive. But all he can offer at this moment is a soft, "It's fine, I'm fine." "You swear?" Sarasi asks, looking doubtful. "Alive doesn't mean fine," Neeld adds, somehow managing to give Obi-Wan his trademark pointed look through the blue hollow. Somewhere in the medbay, someone snorts at the comment, serving as a reminder that this isn't actually a private conversation, even if the clone troopers around him are at least pretending to be doing something else. Obi-Wan sighs. He probably should know better than to offer either Sarasi or Neeld placating answers anyway. Even if the words are offered as a comfort, they will always prefer the truth. A personal preference as well as a remnant of the war. When alive, hardly meant fine, and even the smallest of gashes could infect. "Mostly fine," he offers with a thin smile. "I should make a full recovery in less than 2 months." "Mostly fine," Neeld repeats with a raised eyebrow. Sarasi lets out a short laugh and bumps her shoulder against Neeld's. "We'll take it. When neither us nor Padme had heard from you." Neeld frowns and, when Sarasi trails off, asks, "What happened? Where are you?" "I got shot down, but it's—" "Shot down?" Sarasi echoes, her face pale and shocked. "Who?" Neeld demands with a growl, fierce anger burning in his eyes. "Was it the Republic?" "Hey!" Razor, one of the clones in the medbay, cries out in offense. He's immediately shushed by someone else, but the damage has already been done. Neeld's eyes narrow. "Who's that? Obi-Wan, where are you?" he demands. Obi-Wan sighs. It's not that he wasn't going to tell Sarasi and Neeld anyway, because this is information they have to know. It's just that he'd have preferred to perhaps share it later. When the medbay isn't as full as it is with troopers healing after the attack on the ice moon they rescued him from. Because when it comes to holding grudges, Neeld is vicious. He sinks in his teeth, and he never lets go. And the grudge he holds against the Republic is almost as big as that he holds towards the Jedi. "I'm on the Maverick," Obi-Wan says, careful and slow so he can take his time to pick his words. "A Republic cruiser." Neeld's expression darkens in an instant. "Excuse me?" "Not," Obi-Wan says firmly, before Neeld can start a tantrum. "Because they shot me down, but because it was the Gar that saved me." "They can still be the ones that shot you down," Neeld snorts, crossing his arms in front of his chest. Obi-Wan sighs. This feels very much like the conversation he had with Jin just an hour ago. It's a good thing Steady's shift has ended and it's Curie leading the medbay for the moment. The CMO would most likely have snatched the comlink from Obi-Wan's hands, muttering cutting comments about rest and limiting stress. Although, Curie might do the same if he doesn't de-escalate this quickly. "They don't fly vulture droids," he counters, hoping it will settle Neeld. "The Separatists attacked you," Sarasi asks. "Why?" Obi-Wan shakes his head. "No clue." "They ought to leave us alone, both the Republic and the Separatists," Neeld spits, anger burning in his eyes. "Whatever they want, they are not getting it." Obi-Wan pinches the bridge of his nose. "Now is not the time," he says. He understands Neeld is thinking of a few months ago, when the Republic tried to move heaven and earth to get Melodon to join them because they were conveniently located. When the Republic hadn't taken no for an answer, Melodon had to fight an uphill battle to get the Senate representatives off their planet without bloodshed. I'm sure Neild is just as grateful as I am that the Gar rescued you, Cerasi says, voice just a little louder and her statement obviously meant for their audience rather than Obi-Wan. After a moment of silence, she raises an eyebrow. So, are they also bringing you home? Ah, Obi-Wan says, chuckling awkwardly. About that. Cerasi and Neild are as happy hearing that the Maverick won't actually cycle by Melodon until after their upcoming campaign, as Obi-Wan had expected them to be. After reassuring them that yes, he will be fine, and yes, it is really agreed he would be brought back as soon as possible, his next call is to Padme. She answers after a few seconds, and while she is relieved and slightly tearful to see him, demanding to know if he's fine, what happened, and Obi-Wan is having the same conversation again, she also doesn't seem as shocked or surprised as Cerasi and Neild had been. Obi-Wan raises an accusing eyebrow. Something tells me you already knew the Gar rescued me. Yes, she says, with a bashful smile, and even through the hollow, Obi-Wan can tell a blush is staining her cheeks. I was already informed. Obi-Wan is no fool. He leans his head to the side with a smirk. Ah, yes, your trusted friend. Around him, some troopers snicker, and the Force feels nothing but amused around the men. So much for keeping a secret relationship a secret, he thinks. Indeed, Padme says, clearing her throat. Unfortunately, General Skywalker was too far away to come himself, but General Jin agreed to postpone their own mission to search for you. Obi-Wan blinks. What? Padme, oblivious at Obi-Wan's sudden confusion, continues talking. I was so worried when I hadn't heard from you, when I knew you were supposed to be back on Melodon already. And when I calmed and Cerasi said she didn't know where you were either, I had to call for help. Oh, Obi-Wan mumbles, feeling rather surprised at this information. Padme had called for help. Not only that, apparently the 212th had gone out of their way to rescue him, to search for him. He'd simply assumed they were planetside regardless, and he'd merely been lucky to be discovered. I'll be sure to thank everyone properly, he says, feeling rather embarrassed. He swallows, wondering how big an asshole he seems in the eyes of the clones at his lack of gratitude. Once he's finished his call with Padme, he turns to Cody with an apologetic smile. The commander is already looking at him with a small, curious frown. Obi-Wan clears his throat. I thought I'd just gotten karking lucky that your battalion found me during your mission, but now it seems that I was your mission. Cody hums in recognition of the words. Thank you, he says, and hopes it sounds as heartfelt as he means for it to be. I know you most likely didn't have much choice, but thank you all the same. I owe my life to you and your men. He lets his eyes trail from Cody's confused expression to give small smiles to the men around him. Men, he realizes, that wouldn't be in medbay in various states of injury if it hadn't been for Obi-Wan. He looks at Cody with a wry smile. I do admit I feel rather guilty now. If it had not been for me, you would never have been on that planet, would never have been attacked. The commander gives him a calculating look, lets it rest heavily on Obi-Wan for a few moments, as if Cody is trying to stare into his very soul, searching for an answer to a question Obi-Wan doesn't understand. Then he gives a half shrug and turns back to the datapad in his hand. Being under attack is part of our jobs. For as far as battles go, this was a good one that ended with no mortal casualties, he says drolly, the smallest of smiles tugging at his lips. In fact, considering we also succeeded in our mission and rescued you, I almost ought to thank you for your assistance in boosting morale, Triumvir. For a you're welcome, it's really rather terrible. Obi-Wan lets out a surprised laugh. At least something good came out of this then. If he feels the burn of Cody's eyes against the side of his head, he ignores them, just like he ignores the fact that he finds it remarkably easy to talk with the commander. Kiri confiscates his comm after he's made his approved and agreed two calls, with a kind smile and the words, unless you want Steady to take it instead. Also, try to limit the use of your datapad before I'm forced to take that too. Obi-Wan recognizes a threat when he hears one, and doesn't complain. Wise choice, Thumper says with a chuckle, as Kiri saunters back to his desk space near the entrance of the medbay. It's been a day since Obi-Wan was brought to the Maverick, and 12 clones of the 40-sized platoon that rescued him are currently still in the medbay with him. Soon to be 11, he assumes, considering Cody has been passive-aggressively arguing with Steady why one of the highest-ranking clone commanders should not be stuck in a medbay with some blaster wound that's really not all that bad. Steady looked very close to actually discharging Cody just to be rid of the man. Obi-Wan turns his eyes from the disgruntled commander to Thumper, who is in the bed across from him. The clone has taken a liking to him, and Obi-Wan guesses it's because he saved the man's life. When Thumper catches his eyes, he shakes his head. Medics are terrifying. Obi-Wan thinks of Rowenny, whose golden eyes, inherited from her Pantoran mother, go from kind to fierce the moment she sets foot within the hospital, and chuckles. Terrifying indeed, he agrees. I know a medic. She only reaches my shoulder, but I promise when she sets foot in the hospital, she seems to grow a head taller at least. One look and no one would dare disobey her orders. So, Natborn medics are the same? Thumper asks with an excited grin. Obi-Wan hums. I would say all medics are the same, clone or not. Wouldn't know, sir. I've never met anyone who wasn't a brother or a Jedi, Thumper replies, almost wistfully. You're the first. Obi-Wan's eyes widen in surprise. Razor, who is in the bed next to Thumper, scoffs. Liar, you've met the Kaminoans. Thumper rolls his eyes. Iowa bait doesn't count. Obi-Wan's mind, however, is still on Thumper's previous words, still in disbelief, because he knows he's heard right, but somehow it feels as if he can't have. You've never met anyone other than your brothers, the Jedi or the Kaminoans, he asks. Thumper nods. Yeah, I'm just a shiny, sir. Only been with the 212th for one campaign. This'll be my second. Somewhat fleetingly, Obi-Wan wonders how old Thumper is, how old the clones are in general, if he's never even met a random person, how sheltered he must have grown up. Of course, he's heard it all. They were clones, created to be soldiers, but hearing a newsreel and actually hearing the devastating fact for himself are two different things. It makes him sad and angry all at once, the injustice of it burning under his skin, and he is, yet again, grateful that Melodon is not part of the Republic. You have no war where you're from, right? Thumper asks, oblivious to Obi-Wan's thoughts. He peers at Obi-Wan with wide, curious eyes. It's an expression Obi-Wan is well acquainted with, Sarasi's little boy Hugo throwing it his way whenever he catches Obi-Wan using the Force. Obi-Wan can't help but smile fondly as he softly and gratefully says, We don't. Not anymore. What's it like? Thumper asks almost breathlessly. In the bed next to him, Razor laughs. Why do you want to know? Razor asks with a teasing raised eyebrow. Gonna leave with the Triumvir when we bring him back? No! Thumper's eyes widen. I've never seen a planet without fighting. Just curious, he mumbles, sounding almost embarrassed. Razor huffs. So you want to know about a Sepi planet? Thumper frowns. He said they're not. And you believe him? I do. Cody's voice isn't loud, but it is firm and certain and throws the entire medbay into silence. It also draws everyone's shocked eyes to him, including Obi-Wan's. Cody looks sure and steadfast, and Obi-Wan doesn't know what he has done to get this man into his corner, but he knows it is something he should be grateful for. Right. Razor mumbles weakly after a moment. Right. My apologies, Commander. Cody raises a sharp eyebrow. I'm not the one who you should be apologizing to. Obi-Wan coughs and offers first Cody and then Thumper a smile. How about I tell you about Melodon, he says, because the last thing he wants is to cause animosity between the clones. So he tells them about his beloved Melodon instead, the Melodon they are still shaping, creating both new traditions and bringing back old from a long time ago, when they hadn't yet tried to completely decimate their own culture through war. How in winter, Het Veluamir, a lake just south of Zahava, freezes over completely when the conditions are just right. How they'll all go out with their ice skates, and even the littlest ones, that can barely toddle along, get brought onto the ice by their parents. The races they have, although Obi-Wan isn't skilled enough to join them, and the split pea soup they'll eat when both their fingers and insides are frozen after a long day out in the cold. The flax fields that stretch far and wide outside the borders of the Zahava suburbs, where the flat terrain stretches undisturbed, sometimes for hours if you took a drive by them. how he always enjoys late spring so much, when the flax blooms and the fields look whimsical as the flax's little, sky-blue flowers bob on a soft breeze. The gold tones the flax turns into when it's ready to be harvested, and instead of little flowers, there are soft golden seed heads that bob on the breeze, the seeds rattling in their pods, calling the farmers to their fields. The foods he loves the most, the sweet stroopwafels and perhaps eccentric drope, licorice that one can get in both sweet and salty variants, and Obi-Wan's rarely met an offworlder that's actually liked it. The herring from the other side of the planet, fished in the sea near the northern seaside city of Zandvoort, that's deliciously soft and fatty and best when smothered in raw onions. When Obi-Wan finishes, Thumper sighs wistfully, a feeling that's wordlessly echoed in the Force by some of the other clones. I'd like to visit once. Obi-Wan smiles, his heart aching in his chest, as he bites back a, "You're welcome to." When Obi-Wan is released from the medbay with the instructions to take rest and a daily appointment with a medic and a physical therapist for his remaining time on the Maverick, Wooly is waiting for him at the entrance. "Hello," Wooly greets. "I'm here to give you a tour of the place so you don't get lost." Obi-Wan wonders if somewhere in the man's instructions, there had also been something about not letting the Maverick's temporary guest wander around a Republic cruiser unattended, but he's better off not asking. Wooly has a mohawk and a lopsided grin that makes him look rather mischievous. Obi-Wan hadn't really noticed the first time, what with him being on Death's doorstep. But now that Wooly is taking him around the ship, with a slight bounce in his step, and running commentary on points of interest and anecdotes that don't really mean much to Obi-Wan, he does. He is also not a medic, as Obi-Wan had initially thought. "But in the wreckage, you were there," Obi-Wan says, as they turn into a long hallway that's rather crowded with troopers going about their business, and taking a small pause in that business to look at Obi-Wan when he passes. Wooly chuckles. "I was just helping. Took an extra course after Crystar. I'm no medic, but I can help, you know? Every squad must have at least one trooper with intermediate life support training in case shit hits the fan. Which happens a lot." Wooly flashes Obi-Wan a grin. "Especially since my squad, we're ARCs." ARCs. Wooly's shoulders straighten a bit, and he radiates pride as he says, "Advanced Recon Commandos." A special unit of some sort, then, Obi-Wan thinks. "And now you are babysitting me." "Could be worse, trust me." Wooly shrugs. Obi-Wan chuckles. With a ship this size, he can only imagine the different kinds of duties one can be scheduled on. "Oh, I do. Plus, you're not all that bad, Triumvir." Obi-Wan waves a hand in the air. "Obi-Wan is fine," he offers. Back home, he hardly gets called by his title, and he'll admit he's getting rather tired of hearing it constantly. Wooly hums and pauses at a wide set of doors that he waves his hand at. "Well then, Obi-Wan, here's the mess hall. Avoid mornings between 6 and 7:30, and evenings between 5:30 and 7. Shift change is a real bitch, and there'll be no free seats." The doors slide open, and a gaggle of troopers spills out. Behind them, Obi-Wan can hear a cacophony of voices, laughter, and what sounds a lot like an argument from the mess hall. It feels like 100 voices, might actually very well be, that wash over Obi-Wan like a tsunami. It's overwhelming, the sudden burst of sound accompanied by the feeling of so many beings in the Force, even if somehow every single trooper has at least some basic shielding. When the last trooper is out, the doors close and the hallway is relatively silent again. Obi-Wan feels as if his ears are ringing, and he lets out a soft breath. Wooly chuckles as if he's painfully aware of how overwhelmed Obi-Wan is, and pats Obi-Wan's shoulder. A lot of shouting. Come on, Jim's next. The last stop of the tour is the sleeping quarters. The doors of the turbolift open to reveal a long hallway, stretching off into the distance where the clones walking are nothing but little specks, bringing home just how terrifyingly big the Maverick is. Narrow corridors lead off the main hallway, with clones darting in and out of them constantly. It's obvious that this is a safe space where the troops feel comfortable, at ease. They are more casual, some even missing parts of their armor, others standing around in little groups just talking and laughing. Obi-Wan's still taking it in when Wooly waves his hand around. So, layout's pretty simple. Rooms are accessed through the corridors, which branch off the main hallway. Each corridor is numbered, and there's 6 to a room and shared freshers at the end of every corridor. He turns to Obi-Wan with a grin. For your convenience, you're in Corridor 1. Obi-Wan chuckles in relief. Good. This place is a maze. It's just the sheer size of it, really, Wooly says, walking towards the first corridor on the right and turning into it. The shinies get lost all the time, so you're not alone. Just remember that the ship's divided into 5 deck sections. Each section has its own sleeping quarters, a gym, rec room, and a mess hall. That's all you'll need. Oh, and medbay, but that's way high up. Closer to the hangar and the bridge. Right, thanks, Obi-Wan says with a nod, but his mind is distracted. For in the corridor, the lightheartedness he felt before falls away. Here, the Force feels slightly cold and wet. Here, grief clings to the walls. Obi-Wan wonders if it has something to do with the pauldrons. They hang on the walls next to the doors of each room. Initially, they look like decoration, but there is no logic behind the number of pauldrons per room. Obi-Wan wonders whose they are, if they belong to the clones staying in the room. But Wooly doesn't offer any information, so Obi-Wan does not ask. We're here, Wooly says, and stops in front of a door on his left-hand side. He keys in a code for the pad next to it, reciting out loud for Obi-Wan to take note. The door slides open to reveal one of the smallest rooms Obi-Wan has ever seen. It contains a single bed, 2 shelves mounted above it, and that's all the space will allow for. The commander thought that you'd probably prefer your own room, Wooly says, and then, after a small pause, peers into the room with a small frown. Well, it's more of a supply closet with a bed, he concludes, and then he's looking at Obi-Wan with that lopsided grin. But it's all yours. Obi-Wan smiles at Wooly. Thank you, he says earnestly, because no matter the size of the room, he's grateful they assigned him one. I appreciate it. Still gonna have to use the shared freshers, though. Wooly's grin turns a bit sharper, a teasing glint in his eyes. Hope you don't mind. Heard napworms can be a bit... He trails off, waving his hand in the air. Obi-Wan chuckles. Prudish? Wooly chortles. Yeah, that. Obi-Wan shakes his head. I've got enough experience with communal showers, he says. After the war, before they had finished rebuilding, all they'd had were communal areas. Sleeping, showering, eating, everything had to be shared, because there was simply not enough rebuilt to do it privately. The room's perfect. Truly, I'm grateful for all that you and the rest of the troops are doing for me. Well, you did save the commander and Thumper, Wooly says with a smile. Like I said, Obi-Wan, you're not all that bad. Thinking of the kindness he's received and Melodon's efforts, his efforts, to keep the Republic and the Gar as far away from them as possible, Obi-Wan is certain that the smile he gives Wooly in reply doesn't quite reach his eyes. Obi-Wan is considering trying to find his way to the mess hall when his door chimes. He gets up and opens it to find Jin standing on the other side. Triumvir Kenobi, Jin greets with a small nod of his head. Obi-Wan inclines his head. General Jin. I was wondering if you would have a few moments to talk, Jin says. I think my schedule will allow it, Obi-Wan replies with a huff and steps aside the bare few centimeters the room allows. Come in. I assume this is a conversation best had in private. Jin steps in with a nod and doesn't fill the silence when the door closes behind him. Instead, he takes a moment to look at Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan assumes he is being regarded in much the same way as he is regarding the man that now stands in front of him. Looking at Jin doesn't come with the barrage of emotions he'd expect it to. He had always expected that if he were to ever reunite with his former master, it would come accompanied with a longing, a sense of regret, to tell him he made the wrong choice by staying on Melodon. But it hasn't come. Not when the man in front of him looks exhausted from fighting a war in ways that are painfully familiar to Obi-Wan. Not when the lines of grief are carved as deep into Jin's face as they are in the Force that surrounds him. Looking at a man he had always regarded as larger than life as a child, and seeing him this despondent, it is clear there is nothing to regret. Jin clears his throat. Why I'm here, he starts, crossing his arms in front of his chest, is because our slicers have finished analyzing the flight recorder from your ship. Of course, Obi-Wan says with a nod, and pushes down any inkling of disappointment that grows within him. It doesn't matter that he had perhaps been expecting an apology. He doesn't need one when it is this long overdue. Why don't we sit on the bed? I know the room is small, but it will be more comfortable. He is right, of course, that it is more comfortable than having 2 adult, grown men stand chest to chest in the small room. It is also carking awkward. Jin either doesn't notice or he doesn't care. "Your story checks out," he says, turning his head so he can look at Obi-Wan with a rather complicated expression on his face. "It was Separatist droids that attacked you. Considering this, we believe this was an attempt on your life rather than an attack on the Gar. We were not supposed to be in the area, nor could they have suspected that we would be coming to your aid. The question, however, is why they would attack you." Obi-Wan sighs. "Like I said, I don't know. But it is a matter that we will certainly investigate. I could, if you wish, let you know the results of our investigation. Considering it was the 212th that rescued me, it is the least I can offer." "Thank you," Jin says, although there is some uncertainty in his eyes. Obi-Wan raises an eyebrow. "You seem surprised." For a moment, Jin regards him silently. Then, he lowers his eyes with a wry smile tugging at his lips and an inkling of guilt surrounding him. "I had expected something more gleeful, perhaps." "That my words were proven right," Obi-Wan asks, and shakes his head. "You have your men to protect. I understand very well that you can't just take me by my word alone. We might have known each other once, but neither of us are the same people any longer." It is a truth that Jin had perhaps not expected to hear, Obi-Wan thinks, as the man sighs. He leans his elbows on his knees and stares at the wall as he asks, "Do you regret it?" "Do you?" Obi-Wan shoots back sharply, with a frown directed at Jin. He feels the same indignation as he had in the cave, wondering what in the Force's name is going on in Jin's mind. If he has learned, grown, changed, or if he still clings to the belief that it was him that was betrayed that day on Melida Dawn. "What I said in the cave," Jin says, soft and an uncharacteristic hesitant lilt to his voice. "It was tactless. The choices we made are far behind us. But if there is anything I would wish for you to know, it's that..." Jin falters momentarily, searching for words with a pinched expression. Obi-Wan watches the man silently and does not fill the silence. Jin glances at him, his eyes soft in a way they shouldn't be allowed to be when looking at Obi-Wan. "You have grown into a fine man." It's not an answer to his question, but the words do take Obi-Wan by complete surprise. Some childish part of him is happy that his former master is proud of him, and another part of him is furious that the man thinks this matters at all. After decades of silence, why does he have to hear this now? "In fact," Jin continues pleasantly, as if he has not just said something that's tilted Obi-Wan's world sideways, "I do think that perhaps we should take this reunion as a sign from the Force. I would certainly not be opposed to getting reacquainted with you." Obi-Wan narrows his eyes. Slowly, the meaning of the words sinks in. Slowly, he looks beyond the slightly hopeful smile on Jin's face and at the facts. And isn't it a fact that this is all rather suspicious? Here he is, just under a year after Melidon told the Republic no on a Republic cruiser, shot down by the Separatists without reason, saved by the Gar, and now sitting beside his former master that all of a sudden wishes to reconnect. The Force is quiet and calm, but still, Obi-Wan doesn't trust this. "Perhaps," he says, even if he really means no. For if there truly is more to this, then he wants to know.